morning. This is Lance Kenmore with the Kenmore team, and I'd like to welcome you to this week's edition of the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We're here every Saturday morning right here on News Talk 870. As always, you can contact me, Lance Kenmore, anytime direct on my cell phone at 727-8977 or visit us on the web at kenmoreteam.com. Once again, I always like to thank John for hosting and everybody here at the station for working to make this happen. John, how are you?
Well, excited to see how it's going to be when you let Mike take over the show today.
Well, yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about lending. I've been gone for a couple of days. We have had a little vacation, but glad to be back and back to work. And we definitely wanted to kind of highlight what you need to do for lending. How can you get ready for this? There's been a ton of stories lately in the media about how hard it is and how there's no money to be gotten. And I get that question a lot. And so we really wanted to take a look at that. Mike had sent me an article that I thought was probably one of the best articles I had read in a long time that really explained it. So I'm going to address that today and that article. And we're going to talk a little bit about how you can prepare to go see Mike, because he's not that scary. So, Mike, welcome back to the show. How are you?
Great.
Okay, good.
I'm on the hot seat.
You're on the hot seat today. Well, we'll take a little bit off first, and I just, in case anybody had just been dying to know, not so much a celebrity news story this week, but a crazy property story that we always like to go after. And number one is that the most expensive home in the United States has just gotten a much-needed price reduction. So this mansion is built, and I should say the shell is built, in Windermere, Florida. Mm-hmm. And so they started building it 6 years ago. It has the nickname the Palace of Versailles. And it was priced now for $65 million as is. Previously, what? $75 million. Yeah, McKay, this place is crazy. We're talking 90,000 square feet. Yeah, I said 90,000. I'm not talking about commercial warehouse. This is a home. 13 bedrooms, 23 bathrooms, two-level wine cellar, and a 20-car garage. It was originally developed by a resort company, Westgate Resorts and Central Florida Investments. As things got kind of crazy the last couple of years, they had suspended construction on the project. But it looks like they're considering, at least with a $10 million price drop, they're considering dumping the property. Or it can be purchased finished. They could go ahead and knock out construction on it for $90 million. So I'm wondering if Trump is down there circling around.
Hotel.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think. It's just kind of an insane. And quite honestly, when I looked at the pictures, I don't like it. I'm just saying. I mean,
you don't need me to pre-approve you for that one?
I don't. I don't need that denial in my file.
You
right,
know, sometimes
right,
when
right
you do
now
the crazy real estate stories, Mike gets his calculator gobble. I wondered what that smoke was wisping up over there
the
corner of the studio.
Yes, the smoke was wisping away there. So that is our crazy property story. But really back to talking about what we're talking about today, and that's getting ready to get a loan these days. In fact, I've had a couple files like this month. More people were talking about this. And when I saw the beginning of the headline, that's why I wanted to do the show. This was an article done in Forbes. It was written by Mark Green, the contributor to that. So out of Forbes magazine comes an article, and he leads it off with the perfect loan file. The media has it all wrong. And so I was like, what? I'm the media right now in real estate, so I can't get it wrong. There's got to be something here. So as we're researching, I read this article. And he goes on to say that really securing mortgage approval and satisfying the guidelines is not really the difficulty that's plaguing mortgage consumers, but really it's the rigorous documentation requirements that is getting to people. So the good news is, he says, and I love how he puts this out, the fix is simple. Just scan, photocopy, fax, and deliver every aspect of your financial life, and you'll have no problem. So, and then, shortly before we go to close, check everything again and make sure that it's the same. You know, and it was probably the most simplistic explanation I've seen of this, but it just kind of really hit home because we do run into this a lot. We are doing this a lot. And it really is just kind of a mindset issue that if consumers go into this process ready to battle their chosen mortgage lender, you know, and just and try to win the deal, you know, they're going to have a problem. They're going to be kind of the nightmare stories that you hear about. Really, you have to accept the fact that redundant documentation is really going to be necessary to get loan approval these days. So it's really kind of an interesting take he put on the article. I love how he kind of referred back to, he said, growing up as a little kid, he always, you know, would ask his dad questions, and the answer was often because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can expect to have the same type of situation as you're going through the mortgage loan approval process and documentation. When your lender asks for something, very often the response, if you say, why is that needed, is going to be because I said so. Because somebody is probably asking for it. So the real goal and kind of the simplistic overview that I wanted to really start with is, you know, why has this happened? Why is it like this? You know, what is going on? So one of the major changes that they had as we went through the mortgage crisis and we came out of it and we're kind of trying to get back to a standard operating procedure is that, you know, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac is who purchased these mortgages from these companies. So then when Wells Fargo originates a mortgage, they do the file, they fund the loan, and then they sell it to Fannie and Freddie Mac. And so as do lots of other, you know, mortgage providers. However, what happened as we started to have some of these bad loans and the stuff not documented, what happened was Fannie and Freddie began forcing the originator and lenders of these bad loans to buy them back.
Mm.
So meaning that, you know, if you had to buy back, say, a single mortgage, say it was $250,000 mortgage, and you were a small mortgage business, and you're forced to buy that loan back, and it'll never be repaid because it's in default now, you're looking at basically a $250,000 loss. Okay, that was on one loan, one bad loan file. Well, it doesn't take too many of those buybacks, you know, to really add up before it could shut down a smaller company. So as that kind of came into effect, it became the norm that it's not so much anymore that you have excellent credit and you have a big down payment and stable employment with income to, you know, to support what you're trying to get, but you've got to have a profile and a file put together working with your mortgage, you know, consultant, working with somebody like Mike to put the file together so that it is the perfect loan file. And that is a major, major change in the past to where you just stated your income and your credit looks great, and you knew you could repay, and so off you were to the races. And so a lot of people experienced that and got loans that, and then now when they try to get another loan, they find that the situation is very different. So it's a matter of kind of going back and educating the mindset. Why did this happen? Why do we have to do it now? And hopefully the end result is going to be less foreclosures and less problems down the road. So I know Mike's just—he's dying to talk. He can't wait till I stop. He's got to get in here. So Mike, that's kind of the basis of where I started. Let's get people ready to get to you.
Yeah, there's the documentation that's out there. It's funny because, you know, the clients that have bought homes, let's say in the 90s or even in the 80s and those kind of things, like our parents, they're used to this level of documentation. It's the first-time home buyers and, you know, buyers of the last, I'd say, 5 to 7 years that got used to, hey, this should be good enough, right?
Right.
And now I preposition a lot of the clients that come to me and, you know, ask for the majority of the documentation. Now, if I ask for, let's say, you know, 2 years tax returns, pay stubs, bank statement, those kind of things, oh, you have a rental property, oh, you have a side business, then that, you know, opens up more questions and more documentation. And so that's where I see people get frustrated, is that they're not used to having to document everything. And then there's that next level of makes their situation just a little bit different than everyone else. So, you know, it's all about talking to your clients up front and saying, hey, I'm going to ask for this. And you know what? We might have more needs later. And don't be alarmed if I ask more questions or need more things.
Well, that is a perfect example of what he just said there. And then a lot of times what happens is people come back to me, sellers ask me this question, and they'll come back to me, and they will say, well, why is it taking another week? What's going on over there? I thought these people were pre-approved. How can there be more things, conditions that they have to submit to their lender? So one of the things I wanted to really talk about is kind of the process, how mm-hmm. that happens, so that consumers know we're not just making this stuff up 3 weeks later. What happens? So we've got Mike here, Mike Denzel. We'll call him the loan originator or the loan officer or the mortgage consultant, all three names, however you want to call him. So he is kind of the filter. I mean, someone's going to go to see Mike and he's going to talk to him just about what he just said. Income. This is kind of the documentation that I think I'll need. Yes, your loan scenario is approvable. You've provided me the documentation I think I need. And he'll start to put together the file on it. He needs to determine at that point, is the information, can it be validated, can it be documented, and collects to what he thinks he needs to make that work. Now, here's what happens then. So after he's collected all of that data and stuff, he has to submit it to what's called an underwriter.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to take that package and then submit it up to the underwriter. And you can assume that these underwriters are well-trained and very experienced. They're not just looking at your loan file. They're looking at hundreds of loan files. They know exactly what an approvable loan file starts to feel like. So what they're trying to do is assemble a high-quality, approvable file that will come back and do that. So they're going to be double-checking Mike's work, and that's when they might come back and say, yeah, Mike, I think you were right. This is approvable, but, you know, we need to see what their investment account looks like. Mm-hmm. We also noticed there was a deposit 2 months ago for $60,000. We'd like to understand where that came from, and they're trying to determine if that was, you know, maybe profit they got and not a loan or another debt that they... So they have to document. You have to be able to document basically every dollar that you have in your assets. So this is when those conditions come back, 2 or 3 weeks later into the process, and why we're still having to provide more information.
Yeah, right. So the more work we do up front, the better, the smoother the process typically goes. If we're asking, you know, there's a lot of times where we ask all the questions we think we need to ask, we look at the documentation, the client doesn't think to say something, and then, you know, then the question comes up later, like we're proving earnest money or something like that. There's just so many different things that can happen, but the more that clients understand, it's like, hey, you know, the underwriter needs to understand this, and this is the documentation they feel like they need, you know, and it goes back to, well, why do they need it? You know, it's like, well, because they need to feel comfortable. They need to feel overly comfortable with the file.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And let me tell you about a popular one. This is the question I get a lot. Coming down to bringing in exactly what's asked for. A lot of times I'll get the question, they'll be like, we need to see your last 2 months' bank statements. So a client will bring in their bank statements, and it'll be pages 1 through 4. And it says 1 of 5, page 2 of 5, page 3 of 5, page 4 of 5. And then they're like, well, where's page 5? So you submit that to underwriting, and underwriting's like, where's page 5? Mm-hmm. So you go back and you ask the client. And the client's like, oh, well, page 5 is blank. They just have their disclosure on the last page. We need to see page 5. Mm-hmm. it's what they say. So it's in its entirety, and I have stuff like that called back. And then the clients are like, are you kidding me? They need to see a blank page on a statement. Well, that is how specific it is now. We're used to it. I just want to educate the public a little bit about coming into that process. We will help guide you through that as much as possible to make it as smooth as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But those are the types of documentation that we do have to provide. And it's really been the new norm for the last year. and it's just helping manage that process as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, it's a little bit more documentation because of the buybacks that you talked about. I mean,
yep.
That's what lenders are looking to avoid is failed files that they have to buy back at a loss.
Exactly. And when I come back from the break, I'm going to give you 8 tips so that you can be ready when you do go to see Mike and do go to get that mortgage right after the break.
Right here on News Talk 870.
Welcome back to the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update. We've been talking all about lending, how we can be prepared mm-hmm. when we go to see Mike. But Mike, well, let's let you talk a little bit about what are we going to see when we do finally come to see you. I know there's, we talked last week about 40% of the mortgages being conventional, you know, 30% being FHA. What other programs do you have available that you're using within those confines?
Well, you've got, definitely conventional. That can be as little as a 5% down scenario. FHA is 3.5% down. It has a little bit more flexibility with the guidelines as far as the down payment can be gifted from a relative, those
right.
kind of things. A little bit lower credit score can also go with an FHA loan. VA loan, there's another one people think, you know, we're talking about FHA and the, you know, the maximums and different things, and that purchase price is around 279, 280 for a max loan of
right.
270. But VA in this area can actually go all the way to 417,000.
Really?
Yeah, it's a government loan, and people kind of lump it in with FHA and say, oh, well, you know, that's just the same program. It's just for veterans, and it's a zero-down program. I've got a lot of VAs going right now.
We talked last week that 8% of the, you know, of the purchases in the first quarter were actually done on VA, which is statistically a big amount.
Yeah, one out of every 12. So there's a lot of little details of the VA loan. You definitely want to work with somebody who understands it. We've got a lot of those going right now. And then Wells Fargo's got an internal program. So this means that's not one that goes through Fannie and Freddie, like you were talking about, which is the standard government agencies that, you know, fund these loans. Wells Fargo's got a 2% down program. It's for low to moderate income clients. It has no PMI.
Oh, that's huge.
So this is a comparable product to FHA, but it does have, you know, a lot of little stipulations. Your income has to be below, you know, 80% of the median income. There's a
okay.
lot of little details.
Okay.
If anyone's falling into that bracket, they should definitely contact me and say, hey, you know, 2% down, no PMI. I don't make a lot of money. I've got average credit. You know, would I qualify for this? And we can go through the steps there. But that's, you know, that works with down payment assistance programs, you know, we've got those around.
I mean, yeah, for a first-time home buyer, that could be a phenomenal program.
Yeah, I'm working up some numbers to show, and I plan to bring it to your office soon and say, okay, if somebody was looking at a 5% down conventional, 3.5% down FHA, or the 2% down community development program, what do those payments look like?
Right.
You know, if I have some options here, what's the best one for me? And, you know, just it's all about exposing the client to more options, educating them as to what the programs are available, and then it's up to them to choose which path they want to go down, and then we get after it.
Gotcha. Well, speaking of that, I'm going to go through my tips and kind of mix them in here with some of your information. So you hit on number one and two right away. So before people come to see you, tip number one is really study your credit. I mean, good credit is really the key. I mean, it comes down to, you know, getting a mortgage in this tight lending environment. You want to know what your credit scores and credit history is, and really if there is a problem. Most lenders require a minimum credit score of 680, but you just talked about some programs that are a little more flexible than that.
Yeah, FHA with Wells Fargo, we can go all the way down to 600. There is some added guidelines and different things below 640 that Wells Fargo requires, such as reserves and some different things, but we can get down below 640. That 2% program that I talked about can go down to 620.
Okay, gotcha. So, and there are one thing you said about prepare. Tip number two is prepare before you start. Knowing when you call Mike what you're going to need when you walk through into that lender's office, at a minimum here, when you start, is he's really going to be looking for your last two pay stubs, your W-2s, and your income tax returns and bank statements.
Right. I mean, those are the general things to start with, and once we take kind of a snapshot of that, we can determine if there is more needs. Side business, those pop up. You know, there's a lot of different things that people do on the side to try to make extra money, and sometimes they do that and write stuff off, and then it's a negative, and we've got to deal with that up front, because if we don't know about it, that could be something that popped up later in the process if we hadn't seen those tax returns.
And one of the things that, one of the tips we have that we always tell people is to scan and store these in a digital format and have them ready. That way it's a lot less annoying, like we talked about, when they're trying to put together the perfect file and they say, gosh, hey, do you have those tax returns again, or I need to send them here? Just send those out.
Going back to that, though, is our example from just a few weeks ago where the client was requested, they had a second W-2 from the previous year, and it was like, oh, we need to get a copy of that, and they had packed it away.
Right.
And so if you're selling a home and going into a new home, it's always a good idea to keep that financial information in a easy-to-access area.
Definitely not the first box to load into the moving truck that you've
all
packed
the way in the
boxes
back
around. So that is a huge one. And then tip number three that I have is really knowing how much you can afford. Not so much, you know, how much you can qualify for and then borrowing that maximum amount, but really knowing your budget, leaving some room for unexpected expenses, because it's always tougher. I know it's always tougher for Mike when he's going up right up against the limits of what you can get, as opposed to having some breathing room there. You know, it's always a little bit easier when he's dealing with debt-to-income ratios if you leave yourself some breathing room there.
And that's one of my first questions is, what is your budget? Do you think it's a, do you have a certain purchase price in mind or a monthly payment in mind? And then how much do you have to put down? Those, I mean, that's one of my first questions out of the gate, so I know what we're trying to get to. If somebody says, oh, here's my financial information, what can you pre-approve me to? That's not the way to do it.
That's not the way to do it, definitely. And tip number five that I came up with here is really time is of the essence. Making sure that once you've submitted that application and started the process, you know, your days are ticking away in the contracts. We have certain requirements that we have to meet to get back to the seller and let them know how things are progressing. So when your lender requests something, the quicker you can get that back to the lender, the better off you're going to be.
That is a yes, definitely.
He
goes without saying.
He's shaking his head like that is a big one for sure. Because a lot of times, you know, delays in that lending process could really end up costing it. Eventually could cost a buyer a home because a seller might not agree to extend that contract. If you're missing it by a week or 2 weeks, it's kind of a red flag to a seller that there were probably some problems. And so it's very difficult when we get into that position.
And typically when we come back and we're asking for something after the process has started, we're at a stop. You know, we're at a stop waiting for that information. If it's just information that we're pulling together, we're going to continue to move forward. But if it's something we need from the client, it's stop and wait.
Yeah,
and
you're done for that time period. Another thing, too, and I know Mike has talked about this a lot, and in this day and age, it's really, you know, we've talked about the pluses and the minuses, and I think a lot of listeners would agree, you know, it is more difficult and a little more taxing because of the documentation, but it is so worth it at this point in history, and the reason that I say that is if you can go through this process and get a loan, my next tip is consider a shorter-term loan. Interest rates, I mean, are at or near, depending upon who we talk to, rock bottom. If they go lower than they have been, then yes, I was dead wrong. Please, I'll admit it. You know, so, but they are, I mean, they are so close to what we believe the bottom is, that really, if you've had a 30-year mortgage in the past, you know, and you were at a rate higher than 6 or, you know, 6.5 or 7, it's very likely how surprising it could be. You totally should consider a shorter term loan now at interest rates we're at now, you could be having a 15 or a 20 year mortgage at these rates with probably not that big of a difference in your payment.
Yeah, just depending on how long they've been in the home, that's absolutely true. And I'm a big advocate of shorting up that term, paying less interest.
Yeah, that for sure is 100%. And then my next tip that I have here, and Mike can probably speak to this a little bit, you received a gift to help for buying the house. Please be ready to explain the gift.
Yeah, absolutely. Documentation, depending on when a client gets that gift, determines the type of documentation and how they got the gift. There's a whole section in the underwriting guidelines of gift procedures, so it depends on what program you're on, how you got the gift, when you got the gift, all those different things. And if you are going to get a gift, then it is good to let your loan officer know that that's going to happen, and then they can let you know the best way to receive the gift.
Definitely. And then this is this one is a good one. I totally believe in this tip, and it really is be persistent. And I just want to kind of say a little bit with a disclaimer, but if one lender rejects your mortgage application, that doesn't necessarily mean all lenders will. One of the things Mike talks about on the show a little bit is that they have hundreds and thousands of programs for different type of qualifications. Some of those programs, in fact, one he mentioned, like the 2% conventional down, you know, somebody might have been denied a mortgage payment because they didn't have enough down payment, or they didn't qualify for maybe a certain company only had a 5% down conventional option. Just because they weren't able to get the mortgage at one place doesn't mean that you can't double check that one more time with somebody else that might have more options available to them. So I think just be persistent in that, asking the right questions, and then kind of like getting a second opinion from a doctor, it doesn't hurt to get a second opinion from somebody like Mike.
I appreciate it. You're absolutely correct.
And then the last one, and we've talked about it a little bit, and that is really monitoring the appraisal values. Occasionally, there will be a problem with an appraisal value. Mm-hmm. There are certain steps you can take to, at times, you could even challenge that appraisal value, or maybe there was a mistake made on the appraisal that you could get corrected. That is not always the case. Many times they are correct, but we do find mistakes sometimes, and we're able to correct those. So really paying close attention to if there was a problem with the appraisal, what was that problem, and how can we fix it? A lot of times there are work orders required in appraisal that maybe people weren't willing to do. But if we are willing to do those work orders and make those corrections, a lot of times we can then get the appraisal at value with those changes. So it's really being flexible to deal with that appraisal when we get it back.
Absolutely.
And that is that was my last tip, Mike. So I hope everybody's prepared to see you now.
Yeah, that'd be great. You know, it's funny. I did get a couple calls last week and mentioned, something about the radio. I've got a lot of ads on the radio along with the show, too, so I'm not sure exactly what they heard. But it was good to hear the feedback from some people calling in saying that that they're going to take advantage of what we keep saying. It's free. It's a free call to get some advice. And this particular gentleman was thinking about selling and buying another place.
Excellent.
And just kind of walking through, okay, what could I afford? Again, that's exactly what I do.
Yep.
So that was great to get. And earlier, I hope, you know, we've talked about different programs. I hope people understand there's more than, you know, a lot of people out there just think still it's 20% down. There's a lot of different programs out there, especially low to moderate income programs. So give me a call, 736-2621, or on the cell, 531-9507. And as always, Wells Fargo Home Mortgage is a division of Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender.
Definitely. And it is time, you know, vacation over for me, time to get back to work. So I'm very glad that my gal is at the office and people that take care of our business have handled things so well. We are rocking and rolling. There's some great properties out there, and we are just really now officially in what I call the spring market. So we're excited to be here in quarter two and going crazy. 727-8977 is my cell, or kenmartine.com.
And we will see you next Saturday right here on the Tri-Cities Real Estate Update.